Well, thank y'all for being here this morning. Just a couple of things before we actually get started. On the way that I've set up these lessons, you might notice now I've handed out the first three, and they don't actually symbolize each class. One lesson isn't going to be one day. Some classes, we might cover a couple of lessons in one day. Some classes, we might take several days to cover one class. But just wanted to give y'all a heads up on that. When I was preparing this, I was trying to do this at maybe a little different approach on some of this, at least in the beginning. The first three lessons, I wanted to look at what worship is, who and why we should worship, and how we should worship. So if you look at page one, come on in.
All right, that's okay.
On page one, I put here, what is worship? And what I want to do is look at the scriptures to have a better understanding or better idea of what worship is by the way that it's used. Now, I've listed several verses here that's under the bold lettering, and I hope you've taking the time to look at some of these verses. Now, we're not going to look at all of them in class, of course. But I did want to look at a couple here. If you'll turn over to Exodus 3:12. In Exodus 3:12, it says, "You shall worship God at this mountain," down at the end of that verse. And you might have a footnote in your version. What does worship, what is the footnote for worship? What's another way you could word that?
Serve.
Okay, to serve. And that's the version I'm looking at, is the New American Standard 95. It says to serve. What about any other versions? Well, I believe
King James
says
to serve.
Does it? Okay, okay. And I think on this one.
New King James also.
That serves, okay. Greg, you serve also?
Yeah.
Okay, so on this verse, they're all the same, but we'll notice on some of these other ones, they're going to have different words, some of the same meaning, and what I want to do is look at this so we can have a better understanding of what this word worship can mean. And Exodus 12:31, it's kind of the same idea. It says, worship the Lord, and it has the footnote to serve. And in 2 Chronicles 7:19, we'll turn over there. And if y'all have any questions, just stop me as we're going. I'll try to answer them. In 2 Chronicles 7:19, it says, "But if you turn away and forsake my statutes and my commandments, which I have set before you, and go and serve other gods and worship them." Okay, so that we see this idea that worship is serving, has to do with service. And Jeremiah, you don't have to turn there. In Jeremiah 25:6, same idea again. "Do not go after other gods to serve them and to worship them." And some of those verses that I had listed that we're not looking at, we see this idea over and over and over again. And if you would, let's turn to Exodus 23. In Exodus 23:24, says, "You shall not worship their gods, nor serve them, nor do according to their deeds." Okay, so we see this idea of worship or serve or doing. So what does this imply? What does it tell us about this word worship?
It's an active word.
Okay, it's action. It implies action. And these words kind of build upon each other. It says not to worship, nor to serve, nor to do. So these are, this implies action. In Deuteronomy 8:19, says, it shall come about, if you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them. So, we see this idea again is go after. At least that's what the American Standard Version says. Greg, is yours walk after? Okay, so American Standard says walk after. And what's the New King James? Is that follow?
Follow.
Okay.
Serve and worship.
Oh, is yours walk after? Okay, so King James is walk after and New King James is follow. Sure. And so we see again that this worship requires action. Now, some of the verses we looked at, we see different things that are being worshipped here, and that wasn't the main focus. I was wanting to look at what the word means, regardless of what was being worshipped, whether it was right or wrong, because they were worshipping other gods in some of these examples. But we can see that this worship had to do with serving or wanting to serve or doing the will of this God. We can see from these verses, and we'll see more as we study, that even if these were not considered acceptable worship, it was still called worship. And that can help us in defining and understanding this word that we're speaking of. And we can also see that in these verses, worship was an action or service that was driven by what was important. So that's what we're going to see, that this has to do with what's important. If you'll turn over to Matthew 6:24, Matthew 6:24 says, "No one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth, or mammon." And the reason I put that on there is, you know, what's the problem in this verse? Was the problem because they had riches?
Okay. Priorities.
No, okay, priorities. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with having the riches. The idea was the priorities, is you will hate one and love the other. Are there any other comments or suggestions? Yes, sir, Rocky.
Your point was being made that worship and service is kind of related. My observation is that as we look at these verses, we see the word worship and separated by the word and.
Okay.
And I think, you know, this gets back to the point that and doesn't always mean a list like we normally think of, but sometimes
Correct.
It will explain it. So I think
right.
that service
upon.
Is built upon what true worship is. That was one comment.
Okay.
I had a comment on that first verse, Exodus 3:12. That passage is quoted in Acts 7:7, and Stephen is quoting it. And in the New American Standard, you know, here in Exodus it had the word worship, but then in the New American Standard, if you go to Acts 7:7, Stephen is quoting this, you know, the word actually, instead of being worship in the New American Standard, it's actually the word serve.
Okay.
So just another verse to show that, you know, I guess worship to God involves, you know, more than just praising Him, involves, you know, obeying His will and serving Him. See that? 7:7.
Yes, sir.
Over there at the end there.
Thank you, Rocky.
Hi.
Yes, ma'am.
I found it interesting back up in the passage in Exodus chapter 23, where Moses was comparing God and all the other gods. They had been told to destroy them. And in verse 13 of that same chapter, Moses told him, or God told him, to be circumspect. And in verse 33, he says, they'll be a snare and they'll cause you to sin.
Okay. So it has to, we can see where things can get in the way of our worship. Okay. Is there any other thoughts or good comments? Thank you. Let me see here. Sure, there's no more questions. Okay, so like we just looked at, this had in, where was that? Matthew 26. This had to do with the priorities. What is first to us? And we know and understand that God demands to be first. And, you know, rightly so because of what some things we're going to look at in a moment. But He is great. And He's mighty beyond what we can truly consider. And we also know that He's the creator of all these things we enjoy. Yes, sir.
The thing I think is pointed out on this passage is it's been well pointed out before, it's for our good. It's not for God.
You know, correct.
It's always been for our good. God promised to bless us.
Correct.
It's for Him first, our lives. It's always been that way.
It's a good point, Jim. And we will touch on that in some further studies. It is, it's not for God. It's for our good.
And we see the doom if we don't worship. Personal
lives,
you can see
the obvious stuff. Yes. Like we were looking at, prosperity in itself is not bad, but how and what we're willing to do or not do because of the pursuit of it, that's where problems go wrong. It's not the riches in itself, it's what we're, where our focus is. So, we're to focus on God, and He needs to come first in everything. Now, as you read in the above verses, you saw over and over this idea of worship as serve. And there's also another phrase I wanted to point out, because in the, depending on your version, there's other phrases in these verses that was going to show up. Now, depending on the version you use, it might have been a footnote, or it might have been actual word that was used in your verses. And does anybody know what word I'm talking about? You can look at Exodus 20 and 5 at a hill. Okay, bow down.
Oh, I said love.
That's bow down to. So it might be bow down to or buy down thyself. I think the New American Standard Version calls it. And this can help us one way in the way this word is used. Now, before we turn over to page 4, I know if you've done your lesson, there's the first thing on page 4 is a little confusing, but we'll get to that in just a second. So, in 1 Samuel 24, verse 8, First Samuel 24:8-9. After David arose and went out to the cave and called after Saul, saying, "My Lord the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David bowed with his face to the ground and prostrated himself. Now, I asked the question, what did David do towards Saul? We kind of already answered that. He bowed down. But was this worship? And the reason why I bring this up is because some of the words that we see has to do with bowing down. In this case, was this worship?
No.
No. Okay.
I said yes and no.
Okay.
It gets back to what you mean by worship. And when we think about worship, we think about worshiping God.
Correct.
Declaring His worth. I think you could declare worth another than God. So we don't use the word that way.
I understand your meaning. Yes, sir.
So he was worshiping in German, you know, his position. Correct. Not between man and God, but between man and man.
Okay.
So, I, you know, yes or no, depends upon how you...
So out of respect for his authority.
But he was honoring him and honoring him as a king.
Correct.
And not as God, but as a man.
Okay.
I put yes also because of his position as his ruler and superior, and that the fact that as king he's demanded David's service.
Okay. So in that sense, yes. And as we look at some of the other parts here, it says, why did David do this? So, which we've kind of looked at, is because Saul was the king, so he was honoring his king, or he was doing this out of the relationship that they have. So, yes, I understand. Yes, sir.
Around verse 10, the end of verse 10 gives you the insight, I think, into why. It wasn't a recognition of the fact that Saul was king. Of course, no great, in the normal human sense, no great love lost between Saul and David. But David had great respect for God.
Okay.
That's where it really came from. And he was. Then what he did, because he recognized Saul was there
for
God.
Okay. But it's still because of his authority.
His authority.
Right.
And have delegated authority to Saul, but he went back to the source, too, that drove him.
Okay.
Not that that's going to always be the case.
Correct.
And verse 6 can also be on that point, too. I mean, he's the Lord's anointed. So how can he not prostrate himself?
Right. Okay. Very good comments. Thank you. Now, this on page 4, that was kind of what I was getting to, and I know the way I worded this made it a little confusing, but basically what the question that I had in my mind sometimes doesn't get to the paper, but is bowing down to God the same as what David was doing to Saul? So that's basically what I was asking. Now I know, and we've kind of already answered this question, because both of these were out of respect for who they are, okay, their authority. But there is a difference in God's authority, of course. Saul had authority over David, but that was delegated, as Wally's already pointed out. That was a delegated authority, and we understand that. And we see that in our life, there's government, parent-child relationship, work. We understand that idea. Now, these are all delegated authorities, but God's authority has to do with who He is. And we'll look at some more of that when we get into lesson 2. Now, right here, I put this Vine's definition just to help us understand a little bit on this bow down. It said, or to worship, prostrate oneself, bow down. The act of bowing and the homage to is generally done before a superior or a ruler. Thus, David bowed down himself before Saul, which we've looked at. Sometimes it is a social or economic superior to whom one bows, at, as when Ruth bowed to the ground before Boaz. In a dream, Joseph saw the sheaves of his brothers bowing down before his sheaf, and then it also says that this word is used as the common term for coming before God in worship, as in 1 Samuel and in Jeremiah. We saw that the word worship is being used the same as, or building upon, like Rocky said, as serve, and that they have to do with action. Now let's look at who these actions should be towards. And one. So in lesson 2, titled it Who and Why Worship. So who are we to worship and why should we worship this person? We can see that it has to do with his worthiness. He is worthy of praise and devotion. And I've also put a little definition down there that kind of breaks down the word worthiness that has to do with work. We'll turn over to Psalms, the 29th chapter. Psalm 29 and 2 says, ascribe to the Lord the glory due to His name. Worship the Lord. And in 1 Chronicles, so we see that there's glory due to God's name. That is one reason why we are to worship Him. In 1 Chronicles 16:29, we see the same idea. In 1 Chronicles 16:29, ascribe to the Lord the glory due His name. Bring an offering. Come before Him. Worship the Lord. In lesson one...
Is that where yours stops?
As far as...
The verse?
Bring an offering and come before Him. Worship the Lord. Well, in holy array.
Okay.
Yes. I didn't put all of it on the lesson. So, in lesson one, what is worship? So, we mentioned this idea of authority. And to look at the idea of author or creator. Who has authority over us?
God.
Okay, God does. And why does He have authority over us?
Because He created us.
Okay. He is the author. Right. He's the author, the creator of life. That gives Him authority over us. And what if we don't choose to follow His will? Does that change His will?
No.
No. Okay. As we know in Genesis 1:1, you don't have to turn there because I'm sure we can all pretty much quote that. In the beginning, God created. Okay? And then Genesis 2:16. The Lord God commanded the man, saying, from any tree of the garden you may eat freely. So the Lord God commanded. He is the creator and has authority over us. He expects certain things from us. And we have the choice to choose if we're going to follow what He says. But that does not change the fact that He expects us to live a certain way. And that there are consequences to our choices when we are not obedient to Him. And we understand that, and we expect that in our daily lives. Take, for instance, as many of us here are parents. If you tell your child to do something and he or she does not do that, does that mean it's because you didn't have the authority to tell them what to do? Okay. No, it just simply means that they chose not to obey. We have the authority over our children. God has the authority over us. What will we choose to do? Keep in mind, it's not only in the parent-child relationship that business owners, bosses, we expect to be respected in our position. How much more is due Him? He is due the highest respect and honor. Do we give it to Him? We expect it in our relationships, and so does He. So let's do some self-examination, me included. I just wanted to note that we need to think about these things and be honest with ourselves so we can better devote our lives to serving. Are there any questions or comments at this point? Okay. Our willingness to serve God has to do with our what? It might not have been the best way to word this. I had a certain thought in mind anyway. Has to do with obedience. Okay? It has to do with our obedience to Him. And again, that doesn't change the fact of His authority. And some of you might have thought, It has to do with the heart. And indeed, that is correct. Because it does have to do with our heart. We must want and have the willingness to serve Him. Again, He is the author and giver of life. Any questions? No?
I don't have a question. I just have a comment.
Okay.
On the creator and the author and the giver of life, He's also the sustainer of life.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. In Psalms 95, well, we get up here and we forget where the books are at. Okay. Psalms 95:6, it tells us that we should do something that we looked at in lesson 1. It says, come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord. What reasoning does it give?
He's
our maker. Okay, because He's our maker. And we should, the reason that it's stated is in this verse that we should honor this God. This verse and the verses around this one show us that we should honor Him as a maker and as our creator. And just as we looked at in Genesis, Genesis starts out that in the beginning God created. And we also see the idea over and over in Genesis. In Genesis, what are some of the words that were used as far as when God was creating things? God said, and it was so. So that demonstrates His power and also His wisdom. When Paul was writing in Romans, he addressed this idea. And this same idea as far as God's power in the things that we see. Let's look over at Romans. I'm going to read Romans 1:19-22. Because that which is known about God is evident within them. For God made it evident to them. For since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes, His eternal power, and divine nature have been clearly seen, being understood through what has been made, so that they are without excuse. For even though they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks. But they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. So we see, well, what are some of the things that are said about creation? What do they, the things that we see tell us about God in these creations? Okay.
Everything He does is clear. There's no fog. There's no question of what He does is true and
okay.
Why it's clear. Everything He does.
And these things are, well, even like the verse said, they truly evident that there's a creator. I mean, I don't really see how. I'm not saying some don't, but I don't really see how people can look at the things that we see, the trees, the sky, all these things, and things that a lot of men have talked about before that know a lot more about that than I do as far as the placement of the sun and things such as that.
It also points out there's no excuse.
Right.
There's no excuse we make because of the
garden. Right. Yes, sir.
Craig, you mentioned how you can't see, how some people see that. We know that all cultures, no matter where they are, or whatever age, they always want to worship something superior than man. They have that. They get that desire.
Right.
From the creation. So, one thing, some time ago, one of the astronauts was talking to some documentary. He was saying how all the astronauts, when they go out in space, how most of them are really convinced that there is a God, like being out there and seeing the physical world. It's a widespread thing among the astronauts if they've been out in space. You know, again, getting back to what this verse tells us.
The evidence that they see just totally changed their mind. Any comments? Any other comments? Thank you, Rocky. No? Okay, so his invisible attributes, eternal power, and divine nature. And I think Jim already answered this, but what does this tell us about ourselves? What can we get from this verse that it tells about these people? What's something that we could take to ourselves? Well, we're without excuse.
We should give thanks.
Very good reason to give thanks, yes, ma'am. We should be very thankful. Especially once we see these things and we recognize and realize that should make us a thankful person. Are there any other comments? Yes, sir.
There's one, you know, at least in my stage of my life, I think that's something that really stressed me about the gratefulness that he won't put up with this. And work in a pretty solid case of ungratefulness.
Right.
I try to stress that to my kids, but I'm grateful for what they have.
Right.
Kids nowadays, they complain about this. It's really something that we shouldn't do because we have so much.
Yeah, and
you don't have an excuse for being grateful.
Well, especially us in this country, we take a lot of things for granted, stuff we've seen. I haven't been to other countries, but talking to some of the men here and people that have, I understand that we have it pretty good. So, and that's things we do need to keep in mind. Because we can take things for granted. We need to always recognize where it comes from and be thankful.
I mean, one of the things it tells us is God expects worship. I mean,
correct.
He expects us to recognize. You say there's no excuse.
Right.
At least to the extent, expects man to recognize the higher power. Of course, once you reveal his word, but you understand it even more,
right.
More insight into what he expects. And I don't know, to me, it's just another thing that comes out in this. In our day and age, you see it all the time. It comes in different forms, and that is the switch from worshiping God to worshiping the creature. I mean, we're, as a society, as a world, we're very much turned on ourselves, not personally necessarily, but the outgrowths of that, whether it's our wisdom, whether it's our science, you know, our accomplishments, just all kinds of things that we tend to worship, declare the worth of over God. In fact, to the point of exclusion of God.
Right.
And you know, next point, I think Deuteronomy, God's a jealous God.
Right.
Just appreciate that at all.
Right there in verse 21, we're talking about worship. I mean, that definitely was talking about in the first part of verse 21. They didn't honor him as God. That's worship. Giving thanks, part of that. And then the service kind of fits in because if you don't serve God, worship him, what happens? If you don't serve him, then what happens? The last part of verse 21, you see the depraved condition they became, and then going on the remainder of the chapter, you just see all the wickedness that they were involved in.
Right.
It all gets back to acknowledging who God is and worshiping properly, and part of that is serving him.
Yes. And in Exodus 20, verse 5, that you shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. So, why should they not worship or serve them. What can we get from this verse? Especially if we look at verse 2. It says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery.
God's no different for everything else. He wants our devoted service.
Okay. He expects to... He wants no other God. He expects to be number one.
What did the other gods ever do for them?
Correct.
Verse 32, you shall know the God before me.
Yes, sir. He made it pretty clear, huh? Now, these... Speaking of idols and such, were these... And like you said, Lauren, these other gods didn't do anything for them. What were these idols? Were they really anything? Okay, so the idols were really handmade, right? I mean, they were... verse 4 says, you shall not make for yourself an idol or any likeness of what is in heaven or above or on the earth beneath or in the water under the earth. But idols were made with hands, and God's not made with hands. You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God. So, he's expecting full devotion. Another reason we should serve God is because of His love. We know that, and everybody knows this verse. It's probably one of the first ones that comes to mind. But what's a classic verse in John? Okay. Let's turn over there. John 3:16 says, For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him shall not perish but have eternal life. So, we understand God's love for us. And we need to be thankful for that love, of course, because without that we'd be lost. There's also, I mean, because everyone's quick to say, well, He's a loving God, and indeed He is. But there's something else that is mentioned at the end of the chapter that, in a sense, should make us want to serve as well. What is that?
Obedience.
Okay, but that's all correct, but in contrast to this love, what else is there?
Wrath.
Okay. So, He is a loving God, but He does expect us to do His will. Just one thing that I wanted to mention about, because something I think about sometimes, because we think of heaven, and of course, we should want to go there, and we know and are warned of hell, and we shouldn't want to go there. But both of these things, number one, have to do with trust. Okay? We trust in God's promise of heaven, but to those who are obedient, but we also need to fear His promise of hell to those who are not. Now, we know that we can trust in God because He's proven over and over that He's trustworthy. And we know that through the giving of His Son. But one thing that, because we know the giving of His Son and that we can be right in His sight, knowing that we have this positive thing, this promise of heaven, plus, I mean, that in itself should drive us wanting to serve Him. And the fear of hell should, in a sense, drive us not to want that either. But I think we should get to a point where we recognize His love for us and the things that He's done for us, and that in itself should maybe in a sense be stronger than the others. We should want to serve a God that loves us and that would do these things for us. I mean, of course, yes, we want the blessing of heaven, and yes, we should fear hell, but we should want to serve such a loving God, recognizing what He's done for us. Are there any comments? Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes, and also recognizing that don't sometimes the righteousness just want to keep folks out that don't want to obey. Anyone that do want to adhere to His pattern. You can't just quote, do what you want to do, you've got to do what God wants to
do. Yes.
Not just, you know, just doing what you want to do. Just do things how you want to do. I'll make it. Just, you know, going down a little bit. Just, you know, doing what God wants to do. Sure, you're going to make mistakes, but you can't just go out of the way. Be righteous. Think about Jesus Christ. Well, I got this way, this.
Right. Right, there's more involved. Yes, sir. Are there any other comments? I think we're getting close to the bell's going to ring, so we're not going to go into three. Yes, sir, Rocky?
Just wanted to comment. It really has to do with your point in lesson number one about service. There's a passage in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verses 22-23, having to do with Saul and the Amalekites. We're very familiar with them. And to me, it really builds upon your point about serving. I worship is serving Him and doing God's will. And so in 1 Samuel 15, the story with Saul and the Amalekites, Samuel's talking to him. He says in verse 22, the Lord said, has the Lord as much delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices? You know, there's the worship. As obeying the voice of the Lord, behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed the fat of rams. Verse 23 is kind of interesting because we've been talking about idols and so forth. It goes on and says, rebellion is as the sin of divination, and insubordination is as iniquity and idolatry, because you rejected the word of the Lord. So when I think about worship, you know, it's important, I guess, for us when we worship God, is that, you know, we are in obedience, trying to do our best to serve Him.
Right.
Evidently, God doesn't accept our worship if we're not, being a faithful servant.
Yes.
So I thought that was a real good point you were making in the lesson. Right?
Are there any other comments? Okay, if for next class, if you'll do lesson three, but we're probably going to finish lesson three. And we might go into lesson four, so let me go ahead and hand that out.